Right, so for some reason a lot of people couldn't come this evening. I think they were all up very late last night. But let's go further and see what begins to happen today. So now we have the introduction of gender polarities. We've talked about a whole lot of different polarities, and at this point one of the most powerful and one of the most exciting forms of polarity is introduced, which is gender polarity, and that's Hashem saying in verse 18, "Vayomer Hashem Elokim." Now that He's established the tree of Da'at, and you remember we discussed what that is, and we redefined the idea of Da'at as the idea of being able to imagine that which you've never experienced. The idea of being able to have intimate knowledge of that which is separate from you, of that which you've never experienced. That was the essence of Tov V'Ra, and the Tov V'Ra doesn't mean moral good and bad. It means attractive and unattractive. It means nice and not nice. It means the things one would want or not want. So the Eitz Hadaat is the tree that enables a person to imagine things that they have never experienced and want those things. That's what the tree of knowledge does. Without the Eitz Hadaat, not eating from the Eitz Hadaat, it appears that Adam could not imagine something that he was not or that he did not have. So ambition wasn't there, and greed wasn't there, and Yetzer Hara in any kind of form wasn't there. There was no dissatisfaction with who he was. There was no desire to be something other than who he was, or to be somewhere else than where he was. So you see, a lot is written, particularly nowadays in the New Age spirituality stuff, about being in the present and being mindful of the present and being conscious of the present. And in Torah, obviously, there's also a lot of importance placed in that. But I think we might have mentioned one of the earlier shiurim. It's interesting that in the Torah, there actually isn't a word for being present. There's a word for the present tense. The hoveh is the present tense, but you can't say I am in Hebrew. You can say I will be, and you can say I was. You can't say I am. So as much as there's a focus on being in the present, in Hebrew you can't be in the present. You can act in the present. You can be in the future, you can be in the past, hayiti, you can say I was, or ehiyeh, I shall be. But I am, there's no word. So you can say ani kotev, ani omed, I am writing, I am standing, I am sitting. If there's a verb attached, you can have a present tense. But you can't have a present tense just on its own. You can't just be. Now in Buddhism, you can just be. And you can sit and meditate all day. And you're being. We don't have that. You can dabble. You can learn. You can think. But you can't be. Being is an action. The way we be is through action. You can have been, and you can will be, but you can't be in the present unless you're active. So for us, the idea of inactivity is not a state of being. It's actually a state of not being. So for example, the idea of 2 minutes of silence to remember somebody, that's a very non-Jewish idea. We don't do silence. What do? To remember somebody? You give tzedakah. You say Kaddish, you learn a Mishnah, you do something. You don't sit and do nothing for two, thousands of people sitting and doing nothing for 2 minutes. Why would one do that? What kind of schut is that for anybody or for anything that the whole world stopped and did nothing for 2 minutes? It's not a Jewish idea. The Jewish idea is you do something, you dedicate something, you dedicate an action. When we're in the present tense, and yes, in that action, we have to be present. That's the idea of Kavanah. And what does Kavanah say? So for example, in the New Age material, they talk about mindfulness. We don't have a word for mindfulness. The closest we get to mindfulness is Kavanah. And what does Kavanah really mean? What is the literal translation of Kavanah?
Direction.
Is direction. So you give direction to an action. So you're in the present. It's not just a mindless action. It's an action given direction. That's how we do mindfulness. So whether you're talking to somebody, it's with direction, it's with purpose. whether you're shaking a lulav and an etr, or you're putting on tefillin, or you're lighting a Shabbos light, or you're doing an act of chesed, or you're cooking in the kitchen, or you're at business, whatever it is that you're doing, it's done with kavanah. It's done for a higher purpose. It's done with intention. That's our sense of mindfulness. Mindfulness in action, not mindfulness outside of action. Now, that doesn't mean that there's no value in some of the mindfulness exercises, and breathing and being able to slow oneself down, but that's also action. You're acting, you're focusing on breathing, you're focusing and you're doing it for a purpose in order to slow your mind down, in order to be able to access your subconscious. But in the Torah, you're meant to be doing that in moments of action. So to be acting in mindfulness, that becomes really important. One of the first classes I ever went to in mindfulness, they did a very well-known exercise, which is eating a raisin mindfully. And it takes about 10 minutes to eat the raisin mindfully. But it's very delicious. You taste things in that raisin that you've never tasted before. That's more what we do, the idea of saying a bracha and eating mindfully and being conscious and being aware in what you're doing. So that element of mindfulness is something we're very much into. But the idea of just sitting quietly and meditating, other than as an exercise in order to slow yourself down so that you can do other things mindfully, as an end in itself, that's not something that we do. So the idea of Eitz Hadaat Tov V'Ra is before he ate from Eitz Hadaat Tov V'Ra, so there was nothing in the future in the sense of imagining, so there was nothing, he didn't want to be anywhere other than he was, so he had that element of being very present, of being very mindful. So you see in other religions, you see a desire to almost get back to that state, but that state was a pre-chet state. And last week we said it isn't really a chet. There hasn't really been a chet, and that's why I prefer to call it the pre-choice state. Adam made a choice, and before that choice, he was rooted in the present. He was rooted in where he was. There was nothing in him to make him want to be or to have or to do anything other than that which he was doing at that particular moment, which was serving Hashem. That was his life. That was his being. That was everything. And then Hashem throws a spanner in the works. Everything's fine. He's got Adam. What's missing? Not even a woman is missing, because don't forget he made Adam hermaphrodite. There was a male and a female part. Adam could procreate. So what's missing in the breed? You've got the Gan Eden, and everything's functioning. Nature's working. And you've got all the animals. And you've got everything's fine. Everything's working fine. And it's the way God created it. He made Adam and Eve as one. He made man and woman as one. So Hashem must have wanted it that way. So leave it. Just leave it. What would have happened had Hashem done?
Boring.
It would have been boring, true. The Torah might have stopped at this point. There might have been...
He will always be alone.
He'll be alone, but he wasn't complaining. Because he doesn't know what it is to be alone, because he can't imagine. So he's in a wonderful situation. You can't imagine what it is to lie, have company. So leave it. What would have happened? Well, what wouldn't have happened? Okay. He wouldn't have eaten from Eitz Hadaat, because that was through Chava. And everything would have been fine. We would still have been in the Garden of Eden today. What could be better?
Didn't he see that all the animals
had? But we're not there yet. At this point, I said, Vayomer Hashem Elokim, not so good for man to be alone. Why not? What's missing? One of the questions, one of the points was made is, can we leave questions till the end? And I'll leave time for that, mainly because of the tape, because there are many, many people who listen to the tape who can't be here. So it's very interrupting in the tape. They can't hear the question. So just for the sake, if it's okay with you, just make a note or a mental note, and I'll make time for questions at the end. So this statement of Lo Tove Yot Adam Levado is so strange. Because the truth is, it's perfect as it is. There's nothing missing. And everything that happens wrong afterwards happens as a result of this. Now, that doesn't mean that Hashem did it in order that things should be bad. The Orachaim and others speak about that. But, of course, Hashem did it for the best reason. And to create a better world, not a worse world. But in a sense, what the story is almost that perfection is imperfect. It's true the world was perfect, but that's not sustainable. That can't work. With perfection, there's no energy. boring. You said it was going to be. It would be boring. That's, yeah, absolutely. The world would be static. There would be no dynamic to the world. There would be no movement to the world. We talked about the importance of challenge and resistance. That you get energy is only valuable when it encounters resistance. You can have all the energy in the world, but unless it can turn a light on, it isn't really much use. So we know there's energy in the waves, and there's energy in the winds, and there's energy in the sun. And maybe you can capture that energy in these solar panels, but that still doesn't do anything. It doesn't help capturing it. It doesn't help having batteries. It doesn't help having power stations. You, at the end of the day, you've got to have appliances. And what is it that makes the energy turn the light on? Resistance, isn't that right? Unless there's resistance, there's no light, there's no heat. So it's only when energy encounters resistance that you've got light, that you've got the manifestation of energy, usable energy, energy that it can be convertible into something that is productive. So Hashem has created a world that is perfect, but in perfection there's no resistance, because resistance is imperfect, isn't that right? The fact is, as you put current through a filament, through an electric light bulb or whatever it is that you put it through, if I'm not mistaken, you lose some of the current in the process. It's not perfect. And that's why you get heat escaping, your appliances, even your phones heat up. It's not perfect. It can't be perfect. So when you've got energy and you've got resistance, yeah, then your cell phone can work. You need resistors. You've got these little miniature transistors. But whatever you do, it's resistance. Unless the energy encounters resistance, it doesn't convert into power. But to have resistance, you've got to accept imperfection. So Hashem, when Hashem says Lo tov heyot ha'adam levado, it's perfect for man to be on his own, but it's not tov. There's a difference between tov and perfect. There's a difference between good and perfect, between good and shalom. The world is shalom. The world is complete. The world is perfect in that sense. Tov is dynamic. That's why Etz Hadat Tov HaRa, we said last time, is not moral good. It's that goodness that is attractive, that draws you to something, that makes you want something, that ignites your passions and desires. That's what Tov and Ra is. And Tov and Ra is that polarity. It's another polarity. Like Shamayim V'aretz and Elohim and Hashem, and all the polarities we've been dealing with. And Tov V'Ra is another polarity. But that polarity is the resistance that gets introduced into the world. So when Hashem says, Lo tov heyot ha'adam levado, it's not exciting, man being on his own. It works. There's nothing missing in how it'll work. He can procreate, then we can have a community of people, and then he won't be lonely anymore. If it's about lonely, let him have some children. Let him create a tribe. And what would be the problem with that? The people weren't dying at this point, so he would soon have big tribes and cities and populations. He didn't need a wife. What? It's not about a wife. It's about a woman. It's about another species, another being that is different from him, that works together with him. And it has nothing to do with the need for procreation, and it has nothing to do with loneliness. Because he could procreate and have children, then he wouldn't be lonely. So that's not what Lord Tov HaYot HaAdam LeVado means. So what's the Lord Tov? So we've got to look at this. I said to you last time that I'm not too worried about, I can't be worried about political correctness, because otherwise we won't understand the Torah. We've got to understand what the Torah is. If it doesn't fit in with current norms, then we've got a problem, and we need to figure the problem out. But that isn't a reason to change the Torah. That's a reason to figure things out. Maybe after last night we don't have to worry that much about political correctness anymore. So there's a very strange kleyaka, but based on what we've learned so far, we'll begin to understand it. Now this will sound very weird to a modern person. V'yeshomrim lo tov. So what is the meaning of lo tov? She'ein ha'adam nikra oseh tov b'mitzvat Hashem yitbarach k'shehu levado. Because you're not called a good doer if you're on your own. And again, so he won't be on his own, he can have children. That's not what you need. Ve'ein lo mitnaged. He doesn't have resistance. It's as simple as that. You can't do good. It's not good if you don't have resistance. Hamatehu lederech ra. You need somebody who's going to persuade him to be mischievous and do bad things. You need a woman. Okay, how do you go and put this together? It's weird, but we'll understand it. Lefichach eser lo ezer kenegdo. That's what ezer kenegdo means. Somebody who's ezer. That word ezer is very interesting. I was thinking it probably is a combination of two other Hebrew words. The one is az, which means oz, strength, power, and zar. The power that comes from having somebody else, from having a stranger with you. The power that comes from being a team, from being more than one person. So it's an ezer kenegdo. Ki bame shetiyeh ishto kenegdo lahasito lederech ra. Don't worry, we'll understand in a few minutes. Because having a woman who can oppose him and seduce him into doing wrong. V'hu lo yishmala. And he doesn't listen. V'yenatzcha. And he... L'natzeach is a very, very interesting word. What does it mean? He will be victorious over her. But it means something else too. What does it mean? Netzach, eternity. And what else?
Like a choir master.
A conductor of an orchestra, the Natzeach. So it's not victory of domination. It's victory of mastery and leadership. So he will lead her. So she will have certain needs which could send him off into a different direction. He will master her and lead her. And that's how you'll get progress and meaning. As hu nikra osetov, then he'll be a good doer. When that dynamic has taken place, ki adam ein tzadik baratz k'shi aseh tov mitzad ha'echret v'lo yuchal lachtov. And he gives an interesting interpretation in ki adam ein tzadik baratz k'shi aseh tov v'lo yechta, meaning a man is not called, it's not considered doing good if he cannot sin, if there isn't the opportunity for sin, if there isn't the desire for sin. Ki im mitzad eyet lo afsharut lo alachet v'yinatzel. Only if he can sin and wants to sin and desires to sin and doesn't, that's when he becomes great. That's when you've got the resistance, the overcoming of that resistance, and that's when you become great. Now that doesn't mean that the purpose of the creation of women is to lead him astray. That's clearly not the intention, because he's got to be a menatzer. That's not the intention at all. But what is it? So again, it's a polarity. Now, the nature of polarity, he himself is in what status? He's just built and designed to serve Hashem. And he hasn't eaten from the Eitz Hadaat, so he's in the present, he doesn't desire anything different. He's fine. So at that point, he's sitting under the tree in the Garden of Eden, and he's learning Torah, and he's saying Tehillim, and he's davening all day, and that's it, perfect. No chet. It's not even possible for him to do chet. He has no yetara. He has no desire for chet, and he has no... So what is the chance that he's going to eat from Eitz Hadaat? Somebody asked that last week. Why is he going to eat from Eitz Hadaat if he doesn't want anything he doesn't have? He says he's never going to eat from Eitz Hadaat. Now that wasn't Hashem's plan. He didn't put Eitz Hadaat there for it never to be eaten from. That wasn't the intention. Eitz Hadaat was there to be forbidden to be eaten from, but to be eaten from nevertheless. And we see that over and over again. We see it right here. Because if Hashem, you really don't want Adam to eat from the tree, you really want the status quo to go on forever, you really want this level of perfection, leave him alone. Don't introduce an Isha, don't introduce a wife for him. He's just fine as he is. So what does he do, and how does the Klei Yaka learn it? Now you introduce an opposite force. And what is the nature of that force? It's not that she entices him to do bad. But all she has needs. And those needs distract him from what he's currently doing. So now you've got resistance. Now you've got an issue of polarity. Now there's a force. There's a distraction. And the need to manage that distraction. And again, menatzeach doesn't mean to ignore it. It doesn't mean to be brutal about it. It means to manage it. It means to master it. It means to lead it. That's what Lenatzeach really means. And to work with that. But now he's got complexity. There was no complexity in his life before that. So when Hashem says, Lo tov heyot adam levado, eseh lo ezeh kenegdo, what Hashem is really saying is, Adam in a non-complex environment, that's not good. That's not a way that he can accomplish. That's not a way that he can grow. So the complexity that is introduced is introducing the female gender, that whole polarity that comes with it, which introduces different needs that have to be attended to, a whole different way of experiencing the world and a different way of being, and a need to be able to interact with that. All of that could potentially take him right off track of serving Hashem, and he could land up serving his wife, which isn't what it's meant to be. So yes, we've got to work out what that relationship is meant to be, but it's not. He's meant to serve Hashem, he's not meant to serve her, but that could happen, and that's what he's got to manage, and that's what he's got to work out. Now, not only isn't he mentioned meant to serve her, he's even really politically incorrect, yeah? That's the Sforno goes even further and says, "Lo yusag tov ataflit amukuvan bizmuto the talmo." He can't possibly accomplish the real goodness that Hashem wants for him and wants of him. Im yitzarech lihit asek hu atzmo betzokei chayav. If he has to cook his own meal, that's not the way. He can't become great. If he has to deal with the day-to-day physical requirements of existence, he's not going to become the Chofetz Chaim. Not going to happen. He needs somebody else who can take care of that part of his life. Even in Gan Eden, where there isn't that much to do. But you already see Hashem is preparing the world for a post-Gan Eden. If it really was going to be Gan Eden all the time, then we said the angels, the Medrash says, the angels cooked the meals, the angels, they didn't have much to do. So clearly Hashem is already building the system that could work outside of Gan Eden as well. And certainly in that system, and maybe even in the pre-Gan Eden system, but certainly in the post-Gan Eden system, he can't operate that way. So now we're just getting more and more into political incorrectness trouble. So that's just how it is. That's how the Torah works. What can I do? So she is designed for what? She is designed. So, well, firstly, the human being altogether, we said, is designed for service, right? So we are designed to serve. We can choose what and who to serve. But we're in service all the time. There's no time that we're in service. And when we're not in service, we don't do well. When people retire, they deteriorate because they're not serving. We're at our best when we're serving. We can choose whether we want to serve God, or you want to serve our family, or you want to serve your shareholders, or you want to serve the public, or whoever you want to serve. You want to serve your dog, your pet. You can choose who you want to serve, but you're serving somebody. And if you're not in service, you're deteriorating. So Adam is designed to be in service of Hashem, and she is designed, and doing service doesn't mean servitude. Being service, when we talk about service, we're talking about service in the highest sense. She is designed and built to support him and serve him, in the sense of enabling him to do what he was built to do. That's her highest calling. To make it possible for him to focus totally on Avodat Hashem. That doesn't mean she's not focused on Avodat Hashem, and it doesn't mean that he doesn't have to take care of her, and that she doesn't have. Of course there are. There's a whole lot of duality, and there's a whole lot of reciprocity that takes place. But if you look at the primary force, that is the force. If you look at what femininity is, when you look at masculinity and femininity, and you see them operating, that's when the dynamic works best. It works best not when it's force. It works best not when it's a role. It works best when that's what naturally happens, because that's what she wants to do and that's what he wants to do. And he is so great in her eyes that there's nothing more important for her to do than that. And if he's not that great in her eyes, this doesn't work. Why should she serve him? Why should she serve his love? Why should she serve somebody who's less intelligent than she? Why should she serve somebody who's less accomplished than she? Why should she serve somebody who's less of a mensch than she? It doesn't work if he isn't really a big human being, if he isn't a human being that is great. And the idea of a young man going to yeshiva and learning Torah, the idea is not that he becomes a rabbi. The idea is not because that's just what the idea is, because that's where he's meant to develop himself into a greater human being. If that's not happening, what's the point? And today, you've got young women going and developing themselves in yeshivas for women, And they are becoming great human beings as well, which means the men have to become even greater. And when that doesn't happen, the whole system collapses. And what does it mean, the system collapses? The polarity, the male-female polarity collapses. When that's the case. So he needs to be somebody that she so looks up to that there's nothing more joyous for her than to facilitate his being, the being of who he is in the highest form possible. That doesn't mean she doesn't have interests of her own. That doesn't mean that's all she does. We're not talking about that's all she does. We're talking about in the relationship, in that man-woman relationship. She can have a whole world, a whole life of her own. And he can have a whole life of his own. But in their interaction together, that's when it becomes ideal. It doesn't mean she's subservient. Service does not mean subservient. It's a pity that it's the word service, because when we talk about service, as we said when we learned for Ovda and the Shomra, what are we talking about? Like Avodas Hashem, like temple service. Service is the highest thing we can do, particularly when the object of our service is high. If the object of our service is not high, we're in trouble. Then we don't want to be in service, obviously. So it says the Sforna that he needs somebody, not just a part of him with whom he can procreate. That's not what this is about. He needs somebody where there's almost a split of responsibilities. He needs somebody who can create an environment for him in which he can be focused on Hashem. And he has a whole lot of obligations to her as well, and we'll develop those too. And the aloneness that the Klayaka talks about is the creation of the male-female dynamic. So again, her role is not to distract him. That's not her role. It's just that once you introduce masculinity and femininity, once you introduce gender divergence into the picture, you've automatically got a force that is distracting. And if you say, for example, and you can see how we've messed things up totally in our modern life. So if you say, for example, as like the conservative people will say, as far as shuls are concerned, that men and women can sit together. So what kind of, why are we worried about men need to control themselves? What you're really doing is you're denying the force of male and female gender. If you look, for example, in the Gemara in Sukkah, where it talks about how the Beis HaMikdash was constructed and how they created, which is the origins of the laws of Mechitza, where they created balconies for the women to stand on so that they could watch and participate in the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, particularly on Sukkot, which was so incredibly entertaining and happy and joyful and uplifting and inspirational. So they didn't want the women not to be present and not to be able to see everything and stand at the back somewhere where they couldn't see. So they built levels of balconies so that they could actually see. So the way the big shuls are designed with a balcony, that's the ideal mechitza. The ideal mechitza is not something you can't see through. The ideal mechitza is you can absolutely see that there's a separateness. And why? Because of the force of the male field. There's an acknowledgement of what that force is. By saying you can sit together when you're davening, you're denying the existence of the force. And the truth is that certainly in the United States we've created, or are in the process of creating, a genderless society, where you don't feel the force. You're right. You know, in this society, believe me, men and women can sit together. It doesn't make a difference. Men are women. Women are men. Some men are more women than women, and some women are more men than men. It doesn't make a big difference. So the whole principle could, because we've destroyed the mechitza, we've destroyed the mechitza of society. It destroyed the mechitza of that polarity. So the truth is, it doesn't make that much difference today, as it should do. It should be natural. You should have a situation where a man says, there's no way I'm davening next to a woman. No way I'm doing it. I couldn't possibly do it. And today society says, well, what kind of man are you? So little self-discipline, you can't focus, you can't pay attention. That's your problem, not my problem, says the woman. Yes, but then you don't understand. You don't understand what that power of attraction is. And the answer is not, well, then cover yourself up like the modeling said, so that you're not attracted, so that we can't see you. That's also not the answer. We want the polarity there. It can't be that intimate. The time is davening. It's just appropriateness of when yes and when no. But we don't want to diminish the femininity of the woman. We don't want to diminish the sexuality of the woman. We don't want to diminish the attractiveness of the woman. We want that force to be there, because that's the force Hashem. This force is so strong that the Klei Yochid explains that it could potentially take even a man as great as Adam aside, and it did. That's how powerful it was. His desire to please his wife, his desire to be acceptable to her, his desire to be close to her, was so strong that it actually got him to introduce death into the world and to disobey Hashem and all of those things. That's the power that Hashem put into the world. And we don't want to dilute that power by denying that, by denying the polarity. And I think I might have mentioned to you, it's certainly something that I experienced when I went on vacation this year to the south of Europe, but I experienced it again in Israel now, where, and it hit me, and maybe just because I'm sensitive to it and I'm working on the stuff at this moment, but it hit me as I walked off the plane. It hits me as I walk literally into another country. I breath of fresh air. Isn't this lovely? There are men and women here. They're actually men and women. And it's so stark and it's so obvious. And then in Israel, I'm standing in the airport and I'm looking around saying, wow, they're men and women. And then I notice some of the women are in army uniform. And they're still women. They're still girls. And they're cute and they're full of life and they're teasing the guys and there's a force. It's going on. And that's not busy saying, you know, don't speak to me that way, just get on the woman, you can't call me cutie or whatever. I don't know what goes, but there's the teasing, there's a normal kind of dynamic between a boy and a girl, and you feel that energy. You come back to the United States, not there. Say good morning to a woman, that's sexual harassment. Okay? You don't say good morning. It's just come to a point where, because there's no mechitza, we've had to be, you couldn't, one or the other. So in the workplace, there's no mechitza. There's no mechitza. Well, then let's not have gender separation. Let the women dress like men. Let the women do the same jobs as men. I remember the first time one of my early visits to the United States, I'm at an airport waiting for the suitcases. Other flights have all got their suitcases. Our women are coming. So I kind of put my head through the thing there to see what was going on inside. Then there was a woman unloading the... So slow, it was hard for her. But she's got a right to do the same work as a man. Yeah, she does have a right. But is that what you want? Do you want your women shipping suitcases for a profession? Is that what we want them to do? We want them to look nice and attractive. Is that what we want them to do? Yes, it's equality, it's equal. They can, they're entitled to, they have a right to. Is that what we really want? So we've created a society where not everybody does the same work. Women can even become president, almost president. She can do anything. And of course she can do anything. She's got the brain to do it. She's got the ability to do it. Of course she can do it. And she can develop the muscles to do it. There's nothing a man can do that a woman can't do. But she wanted to. But she wanted. And what happens to gender polarity when everybody's doing the same things, studying the same things, wearing the same things, saying the same things? Where's the gender polarity? And then you say, well, what do you think is then, now when you've obliterated gender polarity, what's the natural next thing? Just think it through. Homosexuality has to be the next thing. It's just a natural follow-on. Just a little bit as we've eroded, but people don't get the connection. So once you do away with gender polarity, then there's no gender. Then why must you marry a woman? If you like a man, so marry a guy. What's the difference? And you destroy that. That's the end of society. It's the end of civilization. If that were to happen on a widespread level, that would be the end of civilization. And that's the outcome of messing with the system that Hashem builds in. Hashem puts in an incredibly powerful dynamic. Is it able to distract? And is it? Yes, it can drive people crazy, and it can lead to the most terrible things. But it also leads to rebirth. It also leads to procreation. It also leads to companionship. It leads to love. It leads to intimacy. All the greatest things it has, and all the worst things it has. But that's why it's so powerful. And Hashem isn't worried about giving something that powerful into the hands of others. And say, I'm giving you this. Lo tov heyot adam levado, Because without that power, even your goodness isn't good. As perfect as it is, even that perfection is imperfect. And we're going to get a much more perfect outcome if there is this dynamic brought into the world. So Hashem says, Ezer lo, Ezer Kenegdo. Let's now make this Ezer Kenegdo. The Sifona also has some interesting things on Ezer Kenegdo, on this idea of Kenegdo. Although on the one hand he says, yes, it's not good to, for a man if he's going to have to serve Hashem and do the very physical things that his life requires to take care of himself, that he needs that support and help. But on the other hand, the Sforno says, Ezer shiyemo kmo shavelo b'tendu. This idea of Ezer, Kenegdo doesn't mean opposite him. Kenegdo doesn't mean antagonistic to him. Says the Sforno translates Kenegdo as on the level with him, equal to him in every way. Because in order to really understand him, she has to be equal to him. She can't be subservient. She can be in service, but not subservient. And the idea of kenegdo is if you have a balance, and you put two things in the balance that weigh the same, they're on the same level. That's what kenegdo means. A man and a woman, different, but on the same level. And so you've got these different elements. On the one hand, yes, she's there, but so it's not, she's not there to distract him. She's just there with all her attractiveness. She's there with all her femininity. She's there with all her needs and her interests and her energy and dynamics and everything that makes her a woman, which inevitably has the capacity to be a distractor to him. But she's equal to him. Yes, she's there to support him, but she's equal to him. So you've got these different dynamics that play out. And then we have kind of a break, a cut in the story. So Hashem has said, not good, I'm going to make him an Ezer Kenegdo. And then we have this wonderful story of Vayitzah Hashem Elokim et Adam HaKochei et HaSadeh, and Hashem had created from the earth all the animals and all the orphan. Vayavei el HaAdam lir'ot ma yikralo. And he brings them to Adam to see what he'll call them. So what do you think is important about that? Why did Hashem want to see what he called? Why did he say he brought them to Adam so that he would give them names? What's to see what he would do? Hashem said, this is going to be interesting. What is he going to call them? Wow. Why is that going to be such fun? What do you think Hashem wants to notice? Whatever Adam gives him, gives each animal its name, that will become its name. What is Hashem wanting out of this crazy exercise? So now he says it out, not good for Adam to be away, I'm going to make a woman. Cut. Now all the animals. Now Adam, get into botany, study, go to university, study every kind of animal there is in the world, and define each one so clearly that you can actually give a name to each one. What does Hashem want to see, do you think? So in terms of dominating and certain mastery of the world, that's a nice idea. But what is the Mayikralo? I think what Hashem wants to know is he going to call the male and female by different names or by the same name? Is it going to be dog and bitch and lion and lioness, or is it going to be lion, dog, cat, lioness? Because if it calls them a separate name, then he's not going to identify gender divergence. If he gives them the same name, then he realizes that there's gender divergence in each species. That's what he wants. That's what I should do. What my Yikral Hashem wants to see. He's going to notice that there are genders. And once he's noticed that, he can only wonder about himself. And Hashem needs that curiosity before he gives the solution. Because Hashem teaches us a really important principle here. Don't solve a problem for somebody who hasn't articulated the problem to start with. Because that doesn't do anything. Don't give a person advice if they haven't articulated what they're missing, what the problem is. And that's the whole coaching technique that has become so popular today. Take the person through the questioning process until they come to the point. This is a coaching exercise. So by going through, by noticing, by studying the animals, you will come to ask the question. Which he does. V'chol chayat ha'sadeh, everything, ula adam lo matza izek kenegdo. Adam comes to the end and he says, and what about me? Where's the human gender divergence? I don't have an ezek kenegdi. They all do, I don't. Now Hashem is ready to give it to him. So Hashem identifies the need, takes him through a process. He has to have a workshop to come to it himself. So he goes to a workshop working with the animals, but there are no human beings to have a workshop with. There are no coaches, there are no therapists, there are no rabbis. He's got to do it with the animals. And by going through a workshop with the animals, he comes to the conclusion there is such a thing as gender polarity. Why am I different? Why don't I have it? Oh, says Hashem, now we can do something about it. And immediately, Vayapel Hashem l'kim ta'adem ha'alaydam v'yishem. We must imagine how many things there are there. Hashem looks at us in our life and says, I would like to give this person such and such. Eric strikes here. I have got something I really would love you to have. So let me give you some experiences and hopefully you'll notice that it's something you would enjoy. And we go through our lives and sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. And who knows what we're missing just by not having our eyes open and noticing possibilities and noticing opportunities and seeing. But it's quite interesting that Adam has already now noticed something he hasn't got, although he hasn't eaten from the Eitz HaDaat already. So we're actually, since Hashem decided to create women, we're actually seeing a deterioration, so to say, in quotation marks. We're actually beginning to see. Adam said, you're not happy? Are you jealous of the animals? You want a companion too? Why aren't you happy with what you've got? So he's already having Eitz HaDaat symptoms, although he hasn't even eaten from it, because Hashem has just introduced the idea of a woman. And remember, we talked last time about the fact that it's the idea which is the reality. Things are just manifestations of the idea. The word, the name, the term. So once Hashem has done this, what is he introduced into the world already? When Hashem says, Ese lo eze kenegdo, what does Hashem introduce? He's already created a woman. The moment he says that, there's already the force of femininity in the world. Until that time, there isn't. He doesn't actually have to create Chava. Yes, he has to create Chava to give her to him, but not to introduce her force into the world. So the female energy is introduced into the world the moment Hashem says, Ese lo eze kenegdo. At that point, Adam has already started eating from the Eitz HaDaat. He's already started. That's why the Eitz HaDaat has to come through Chava. He's already started noticing there's something about my situation which is not sufficient, which is not okay. There's an insufficiency. I need something. I want something more. Vayapel Hashem Elokim Tadema, and then Hashem puts Adam to sleep. He goes to sleep and he takes one of his ribs and stitches it up afterwards again and builds the rib or the side, that side of Adam that was the feminine side, because tzela doesn't necessarily mean a rib. Tzela can also mean a side. I'm not mistaken, one of the Targum actually translates it that way. That he actually takes that which was his feminine side and he builds that into a separate being. So why, the Mephoshim asks, does he not create her also from the dust of the earth? He created Adam from the Ofar. I don't know, why doesn't he do the same for her? Create another human being. That's how it was with the animals. He didn't make the female animals out of the males. He made them separately. They were created male and female. But with Adam, he creates a man first, and then out of the man, he creates a female form. And why does he do that? Why does he do it that way? And the Klei Yaakov talks also about the fact that that is part of the distinction of gender polarity among humans and among animals. That in the case of the human, that gender polarity, that it's part of the same. She comes from him. There is a oneness. There is a potential for intimacy, which you don't have in the animal world. You have a potential for permanent connection, which you don't have in the animal world. That the animal world is just the mechanics of procreation. In the human world, they come from one being, and they become one being, as we're going to see. There's a oneness, there's an integration that is intended in that which you don't have in the animal kingdom at all. And in fact, I think it was Sukkot, maybe the Chaim, who speaks about the fact that when in Acharemot, when it talks about the forbidden relationships, and it says you can't marry your father's wife, even if she's not your mother. What does it say? Ki ervat avicha. She is the nakedness of your father. It's always attributed to him. You can't do that because she is part of him. The woman is part of the man. She's not something separate from the man. Their own person and all of that as well. But in their gender relationship, in the male-female interrelationship, she's part of him, she's not separate from him. And that's the way they're built, and that's the way they're created. And then there's the beautiful Medrash. Rashi touches on it as well. Why does he do that while he's asleep? Why does he take this? And there's a Medrash where the Matruna asks them, why was it done in such a secretive way? Why did that need to be done that way? And the Medrash says, because Hashem kind of tried to do it first in front of him, and he was disgusted by the creation. It just the process wasn't an attractive one. So Hashem lets him forget all that and puts him to sleep and does it again. Redoes it in a way where she brings him to her. She brings her to him as a finished product. She brings her to him complete. And we see here one of the, again, there are just so many lessons that Hashem teaches us of how to be in all these. In all these psukim, because what we're talking here about the value of presentation, of how to present things, and that there's value in how you present. That Hashem, so to say, didn't present her well, and he rejected her, and he had to redo it, and do all the preparation somewhere else. And we see that in many cases that. If you actually see the raw material, if you actually see the process, sometimes it's interesting, but sometimes seeing the process detracts from the attractiveness of the finished product. And we're talking, and does it really detract from the value? If you actually see a diamond being mined out of the earth, and you look at the diamond, and it's not a very attractive stone, and you see it's dull, you wouldn't even, might not have even noticed it was a diamond to start with. And then it gets cut and it gets polished and it takes a long while and eventually it's all done and it's then a fraction of the size it was in the beginning. And then you kind of think to yourself, well, that's kind of rather artificial. So all the brilliance of the diamond, everything that makes it attractive is what was done in the factory. Yes, it's still the same diamond, it's still a natural product, but it's all the polishing and cutting that's made it attractive. The actual diamond is not attractive. So why don't women wear raw diamonds on their fingers? They're more valuable. Why must they be cut and polished? Because attractiveness is that. And we're going to be talking a lot next time about the difference of an image and identity, who we really are and how we appear. But that's important not only in ourselves, it's important in objects as well. We always make things look better. We always make things look better than they are essentially. If you dished up food as it is essentially, you just said, look, we need to have a certain amount of protein, we need to have a certain amount of starch, we need to have a certain amount of fat, we need to have a certain... Let's just mush it all together and put it on the plate and eat it. It's not going to work. It doesn't create an appetite. That tovara, that attractiveness, isn't there. And that becomes an important part of that process of eating. So once, again, this is only since Adam has begun his decline into tovara. So, and it's also so interesting, if we're right in saying... That the moment Hashem said, "Eseh lo Ezer kenegdo," there was already the force of an Ezer, there was already the force of a feminine being in the world, then what about when Hashem said, "Eitz Hadat," you can't eat from it? What has Hashem already introduced? He's introduced that force into the world. It doesn't help saying, don't eat from it, but we already see Adam noticing that he doesn't have an Ezer kenegdo. That's an Eitz Hadat kind of thing. How did you know that without even eating from Eitz Hadat? Because there's already that force in the world. And now we're moving into the area where Hashem is concerned that he should present her in a nice way. In an Adam before Eitz Hadad, who cares how he presents her? She is who she is. What difference does it make? The need for her to be attractive is post-Eitz Hadad. But the Eitz Hadad energy is already in the world. The influence of Eitz Hadad is already in the world. And Hashem is building a world for post-Eitz Hadad. And so he brings Chava to him fully formed. He brings us, as the Medrash says, almost he was the Shushbin, he was like the Unterführer at the wedding. But he brings her to him, and she's in her wedding gown, and she's all decked out, and she's got her makeup on, and she's beautiful. That's how he presents her to him. because that's how he wants to, him to experience it. That's part of that course, and we're going to be talking a lot about that difference between image and identity, the difference between wearing clothes and not wearing clothes, which is going to be one of the themes of the outcome of eating from Eitz HaDaat, as we'll see. And as he then sees her and he realizes what it is, and he says, "Zot ha'pam etzem ha'atzamayo v'asam b'psari." This is different from animals. Zot ha'pam, this time, she comes from me. This is very different. Here there's oneness. Here there's intimacy. This is not the same as gender divergence in the animal world. The zot yikare isha. This is a feminine form of ish. This is not what this. This is also like one species, but she's got her own name. She's not just an ish, a female ish. She's an isha, and because kime ish lukach hazot, because she's come from ish, and then the Torah says, and we'll end off with that, Al Kain, therefore, that's the reason why. Ya'azov ishet aviv et imo, why a man leaves his mother and father, that davak v'ishto v'hayu v'basar echad, and he cleaves to his wife and becomes oneness once again. Because it started with oneness. She comes from him, and they reunite as oneness, and there's a nature of, so here we have the introduction of intimacy, something which does not exist in the world before, there hasn't been intimacy before, and that could be the meaning of Lo Tov Heyot Adam Levado, quite apart from the meaning we had. It's not a sense of him being lonely. Yeah, he could create a community of people by procreating, but not intimacy. For intimacy, and the animals, they don't have intimacy. Intimacy is she comes from me, she's part of me. And that ability to reform into one being again is what that intimacy really is. And I want to do that. The last verse we'll do next time, the fact that they were naked and didn't have shame. What does that have to do with that? Why is that? Why is that the transition into the story of the snake? Because it really is a transition. If you look at those verses, and again, I do encourage you to bring your Chumash with you, because there's so much more when you see the words inside, and then you just hear them. And we're told in verse 25, Vayushnehem Arumim, they were Arumim. And then the very next sense is Vahanach Hashaya Arum. But it means two different things. They were naked, he was sly. So he uses the same word for both. But clearly, this sentence is the introduction into the next piece. It's not just the end of the first one. So we'll learn it as such and start the story of the snake and the Eitz HaDaat, even from the Eitz HaDaat, the choice introduced with this particular pasuk, and that will start next week. But as I promised, if you take any questions or comments, if you have any questions.